The United States Has Declared Defeat in Two More Wars, by Ryan McMakin, an Audio Mises Wire narrated by Michael Stack. President Biden announced last week that he planned to remove all combat troops from Afghanistan by September, which he says will mark the end of what is now a 20-year war in the Central Asian country. A week earlier, the U.S. and Iraq reaffirmed a deal to withdraw any remaining combat forces from Iraq and to further wind down the U.S. involvement there, which dates back to the 2003 invasion. In both cases, of course, the stated plans to end military intervention have been framed in polite language designed to make it look like the U.S. is leaving on its own terms, and also to allow the U.S. regime some level of plausibility when it claims mission accomplished. In reality, of course, both Iraq and Afghanistan are just two more wars that the United States has lost in a long list of botched military interventions dating back to Vietnam and Korea. Moreover, these withdrawals signaled the U.S.'s continued geopolitical decline in a world that's becoming multipolar and highly motivated to bring to a final end the U.S.'s vanishing unipolar moment. But what exactly do we mean by lost in this context? Well, by the standards of the objectives presented by the U.S. regime itself when these wars began, these wars are complete failures. For example, we were told Iraq and Afghanistan would become democracies, where Western-style human rights are protected and valued. That was the humanitarian justification. We were also told these countries would become reliable allies of the United States, sort of like Germany or Japan. That was the geopolitical justification. The U.S. has failed on both fronts. The failure of global democracy. When the United States first invaded Afghanistan following the terrorist attacks of 9/11, the U.S. regime claimed the mission was both a punitive and a strategic one. The military intervention was, we were told, designed to punish and disable the Taliban regime, which was fostering terrorist training camps of the sort that supposedly led to 9/11. But, not surprisingly, Washington then decided it was going to stay in Afghanistan for a long time. The voters were soon told to brace for a generational war, one that could last decades. After 20 or 25 years, though, we were told Afghanistan would become a liberal democracy where women could walk around in miniskirts and the youth would spend their days studying poetry and engineering at universities. Afghanistan, we were told, would end up like post-war Germany and Japan, outposts of Western liberal democracy. Needless to say, the Pentagon never mentions that anymore. Even after 20 years, the political situation in Afghanistan can perhaps be most accurately described as an ongoing series of wars between warlords, with U.S.-supported warlords on the good side. The idea that these U.S.-aligned warlords represent the side of human rights, though, is wishful thinking at its most extreme. 2 years after the occupation of Afghanistan began, the promises of global democracy became even more grandiose as the regime tried to grow support for the Iraq invasion. The Bush administration pushed a grand vision for the entire region, with claims that a new democratic Iraq would serve as the launching point for a total makeover of the Middle East, which would soon become a region of liberal democracies. The U.S. repeatedly claimed that Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein was something of a reincarnation of Hitler, rather than the run-of-the-mill dictator he was, and suggested that once Hussein was gone, freedom and justice would flower throughout the region. That didn't happen. Indeed, even if life improved for some Iraqis, such as the Kurds, life became far worse for countless other Iraqis. As noted by NPR in 2018, as a result of the Iraq War, quote, Iraq devolved into one of the most dangerous and corrupt countries in the world, with an estimated 500,000 killed in war and violence since 2003, few families have been left untouched. Although security has improved immensely, corruption remains entrenched. The majority of people before, Sunni and Shiite, did not like the Hussein regime, says General Naim al-Jabouri. But many people, when they compare between the situation under Saddam Hussein and now, find maybe their life under Saddam Hussein was better. End quote. Today, Iraq's standard of living remains crippled by the U.S. invasion, and the democratic government amounts to a regime that is little more than a group of competing kleptocracies. Moreover, the U.S. invasion paved the way for the rise of religious extremism in Iraq, which led to the near total destruction of Iraq's Christian population, which had enjoyed legal protection under Hussein. Rather than spread notions of liberal democracy and human rights in the region, the U.S. regime has only doubled down in its support for the most repressive regimes. The U.S. remains an enthusiastic supporter of the Saudi regime, one of the most despotic and blood-soaked regimes on Earth today. The U.S. has been propping up the military dictatorship in Egypt. Through its interventions in Libya and Syria, the U.S. has taken the side of terrorists and Islamic zealots who traffic young women for sex slavery and enforce the most draconian sorts of Islamic law, something much more rare under the Hussein regime or under the secular regime still ruling in Syria. The U.S.'s regime change in Iraq supercharged al-Qaeda and ISIS, leading to humanitarian crises in northern Iraq and eastern Syria. The failure of regime change. But even if the U.S. failed miserably on installing new human rights-loving regimes across the region, at least the U.S.'s national interests are now much safer thanks to regime change, right? Well, not quite. Although Washington now claims that it is leaving Iraq and Afghanistan on good terms with the local regimes, the fact is that the U.S. is leaving in power a great many enemies who are more than happy to see the U.S. leave. And in many cases, the U.S. strengthened those with an interest in undermining Washington's interests. In Afghanistan, for example, the anti-U.S. warlords, that is, Taliban-aligned groups, aren't going away and are likely to even increase in power as the U.S. leaves. This, after all, is the central claim made by those who oppose Biden's withdrawal plan. The U.S. leaves behind an Afghanistan where anti-U.S. powers are likely to quickly rush in and fill the power vacuum. Meanwhile, in Iraq, the main accomplishment of the removal of Sunni-aligned Saddam Hussein was to grow the power of the Shia minority. This now means the growth of Iran-aligned Shia militias, which are avowedly opposed to the U.S. regime. In other words, the U.S. could maintain a foothold in both countries indefinitely, but it could only do so through old-fashioned and very costly military occupation. That's certainly not what Washington promised 20 years ago. With all its fanciful promises for fundamentally changing the calculus in the Middle East, the U.S. has not come even close to shifting the balance of power toward the U.S. by creating a new bloc of pro-U.S. democracies. Mostly, the U.S. has sown chaos in the region, paved the way for terrorist groups, and reaffirmed support for some of the worst dictators and regimes in the region. All of this was bought and paid for by thousands of U.S. lives and hundreds of thousands of lives in the invaded countries, and by trillions of U.S. dollars. The last 20 years have been little more than the U.S. regime spinning its wheels, all while condemning millions to a new reality of greater death, disability, and poverty. It's not over yet, though. The fact some announcements have been made about ending the wars doesn't mean they're really over. There's no time frame for the final removal of combat troops from Iraq. In Afghanistan, the U.S. may not be ending the war at all, but only shifting toward a war fought by U.S.-employed mercenaries. In any case, the global political situation has become expensive and hostile to the point that it now makes sense to at least ostensibly bring these conflicts to an end. Also, now that the average American voter is barely paying attention, and that the U.S. is facing an economic crisis and weak recovery, it has become politically expedient to forget about those old wars, preferably with an eye to starting a new one with Russia. For more content like this, visit Mises.org.